I am again thrilled to be with you. I'm happy to be here with Judy, who has come now with me, I think, every time I've come, and has been my companion in our efforts here. And this year we brought with us Sheila White, who I hope all of you get to meet. She actually works with my husband and I, and we started studying about 5 years ago, and she has become a true disciple of our Lord in those 5 years, being baptized. And now, and we still study every single week. That'll end here shortly. So, but I will tell you that if you talk to others, you will see how this discipleship works in the transformation of life. And that's what we're going to talk about today. It is important for us to understand who it is that we are, so that we may be those who invite others to this feast that is prepared by our King. Well, the definition of a true disciple is one really that just adheres to the doctrines and the principles of a teacher. Disciples are identified by who their master is, by who their teacher is. It's a real simple kind of concept. One who spends ample time learning the philosophies and the words of the one who they will follow. One who identifies themselves. They look, they talk like their leader, like their teacher. Others can tell who they are by how they act, how they talk, what they think, what they spend their time doing. That is how disciples are identified. If you remember that tragedy of tragedies for Peter, when he had to display actions that were opposite of what a disciple of Christ would look like in order to deny him at the cross. That's a good example of when we step outside of our discipleship in order that we do not look like our master any longer. And this is just a real easy thing for us. See, Christians are not the only examples of disciples. You can be disciples of anything. Let me assure you, make no mistake about this. If you're not a disciple of Jesus Christ, you're a disciple of something. You spend your time thinking and knowing and learning something. Your mind is not just blank all day. And for years, we've seen examples of disciples. You know, I said, when I was a teenager, we moved to India, and I traveled in airports all over the world. We traveled around the world, and there were Hare Krishnas everywhere when I was young. You know, it was back in the 70s, man. And you knew who these people were. You knew what they believed. And my dad watched us teenagers like a hawk, because they would love nothing better than to get a hold of some good American teenagers. And we understand this. We know who people are. You know who the Mormons are? I'll tell you who the Mormons are. They're the ones that take their children and make them invest in a discipleship. They take them and they teach them what it is that they are, and they put them on bicycles and they send them out and they invest their lives in it. Did you know Mormons lose less children than any other denomination in America? You know why they do that? They do that because their children invest in what it is that they are. We ought to learn from that. Our children ought to be investing in this. A discipleship is something you take ownership of. And your children ought to be disciples. We identify disciples all the time. It's not just disciples in the religious world. We can be disciples of modern thinking. Do you know, I know Christian women that quote a bald man from Texas better than they quote Jesus Christ? Did you know there are people that know more about what Dr. Oz says about blueberries than the fact that Jesus says your treasures are laid up on earth? That you've got treasures above? Crazy. We got to get this right. We spend more time listening to this stuff than we do hearing Jesus tell us, I'm going to tell you something. You have faith the size of a mustard seed and you can move a mountain. You ask your Father for a piece of bread, He doesn't give you a stone. You ask Him for a fish and He doesn't give you a serpent. And you say prayers and don't have faith. And we're listening to somebody from Texas tell us how to fix our lives. Hang on just a second. My ear. Maybe men's ears are shaped different. What are we doing? What are we thinking? We've got Solomon who's written us three books that have words that Dr. Phil can't even imagine. I got back here to America after 16 years of being in Europe 9 years ago, and I found out that Oprah Winfrey is a spiritual leader. Craziest thing I've ever heard. Grew up in Mississippi, knows about as much as me. What are we doing? A true discipleship in Jesus Christ means that we know His words and we quote them. You know, these Mormons, they take their children in. They do intensive study with them for a year and a half. They put them on bicycles. They teach them a language and say, you go out there and knock on doors. And we don't think our children can learn a memory verse every week. What are we thinking? We got to get this right, ladies. Matthew 9 and 14. The disciples of John came to Jesus. I tell you, you read the New Testament, you'll understand what a disciple was. A disciple was one who was identified by their master. And he said, and they said, why do we and the Pharisees fast so often and your disciples do not? They were worried about the fact that John's disciples strictly adhered to the teachings of John. And they were concerned that Jesus' disciples didn't look like them. Jesus' disciples were defined by something new. In the 15th chapter, in verse 1, the scribes and Pharisees who were from Jerusalem came to Jesus saying, why do your disciples transgress the traditions of the elders? For they do not wash their hands before they eat bread. They understood that the followers of Christ didn't look like them. And that their attention to the traditions that had been established by them seemed to be different. You know, we don't have time to talk about everything on the Sermon on the Mount. It's one of my, everything's your favorite, you know, but just those words when he first began to talk about what it was that his disciples would be. Just incredible stuff. And he began to blow the minds of those Pharisees and all those ones who had followed those traditions. Some of who were sincere and wonderful. Two of who buried him. Those Sanhedrin that buried him. Nicodemus and Joseph. Wasn't that they weren't going to believe him. But they never heard words like that. And to be his disciple, they were going to have to look different, change. It's what John's disciples understood. It's what the Pharisees understood. Disciples possess, in fact, they embody the message of the teacher. Matthew 10:24-26, a disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for a disciple to be like his teacher, and a servant to be like his master. If they are called the master of the house of Beelzebub, how much more will they call those of the household. Therefore, do not fear them, for there is nothing covered that will not be revealed and hidden that will not be known. What a blessing to be the disciple of the great master. And that is who you are called to be. That is who you are called to be. You know, we're going to look later at that great parable of the king who's prepared the fatted calf. And he says, I've prepared everything and I've got this feast ready. Go out and call him. And he goes out to call him and everybody says, well, I've got some things to do. Don't know if I can come to the feast. Good gracious. And then he says, well, I'm a little disappointed. Go out and invite the others. Go out and invite everybody. Just go out and invite everybody you can invite. Go find the one that'll come. And the house was full. I'm going to tell you something. This house is going to be full whether you are in it or not. You're the one that comes to the feast. The invitation is there. And when you're teaching other people, that's what you're doing. You're just the one out there on the street inviting those ones to come. And you can't decide who comes and who doesn't come. And you have to allow their hearts to decide that. And when you sit down at the table with somebody, don't be afraid. Because I'm going to tell you what, all you're doing is providing them with a feast. And they may come and they may not come. When we first started, I'm going to tell some things on Sheila. I don't want to embarrass her, but she's told me when we first started studying, she thought, oh, this will be kind of a good thing to do once a week. And, you know. And then she was baptized about 4 years ago. And she said, she thought, well, I'll come on and come about once a month on Sunday morning. I'll come and, you know, this will be, you know. She's wonderfully devoted disciple of Christ. Because if you feast on this, you will never quit hungering for it. Oh, goodness, sorry. And Jesus assures his disciples that it was going to be enough for them to be like him. And that he assures them that there will be nothing that is not covered. And that everything will be revealed. And of course, the danger for all of us is that we don't properly understand what kind of discipleship it is that we want. We don't evaluate properly what it is that we're going to do with this. You know, Jesus said that about the commitment. It's a great commitment we make. Because disciples have to put some effort into this. And you have to be interested in it enough to do it. You know, our problem is we're just simply not interested enough in it to make it a priority to be able to quote our Lord Jesus Christ. A disciple knows clearly and thoroughly the words that his master teaches. He is deeply moved. Words change his heart, his life forever. We are transformed by our master's words so that our appearance becomes affected. Lives of disciples change to embody the elements and the characteristics of the words taught, at times changing the appearance of an individual, the dress of an individual, the location in which you might live, the job which you may have, because the teacher lives within you. And this is just the reasoning we give our young people. You know, we've talked about this before. When you talk about your young people about their discipleship, you remember Peter came to Jesus and said, I want you to tell me what it is that we have to do to get to heaven. Because how many times do I have to forgive? That's really, it's kind of a bum deal. And do I have to forgive 7 times? And Jesus said, I'll tell you how many times you forgive. Really what he said, 70 times 70, which means you forgive as many times as it takes you until you die and you're with me. Because this discipleship is not about a minimum. It is about a maximum. It is about being my disciple. It is about looking like me. It is about thinking like me. It is about understanding like me. It is about loving like me. Because you are my disciple. And it's hard. And I'll tell you what, you won't think like him, and you won't know him unless you read these words. It is the only communication that we have. And as a result, a disciple is one who can never get enough teaching. One who will lose himself or herself in her teacher and his words. Because of the admiration and the honor that she feels for the one that she serves. Christ describes his disciples in Luke, the 14th chapter, verses 25 through 33. Now great multitudes went with him, and he turned to them and he said, you know, they were following him for all kinds of reasons. And he said, if anyone who comes to me does not hate his mother and his father, his wife and his children, his brothers and his sisters, yes, his own life, he cannot be my disciple. He says, I'm going to tell you what, you put me before anybody. You know, we talked last night about women lose themselves in their relationships. I mean, a woman won't not sacrifice for Christ because of herself, but she sure will for her children. Or for some man that she's crazy about, she'll make herself do things that are ungodly. And he said, and whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower? Now, how ridiculous is this, Jesus says. This is ridiculous, Jesus said. You don't build a tower and not count the cost first. Whether he has enough to finish it, lest after he has laid the foundation, he's not able to finish. All who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build a house and wasn't able to finish it. You ever know somebody excited in their baptism and excited to start this and excited and just didn't count the cost? We see it in our children at times. What king going to war against another king doesn't sit down and consider what he's able, whether he's able to meet with the 10,000, come against an army? It'd be ridiculous to think that. Or else while the other is a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all, he cannot be my disciple. You know, being a disciple is not about coming and sitting in this building. I wish I could tell you that it was. You know, making your children disciples is not about bringing them a Bible class every week. It helps. It's part of it. And being part of a local congregation, I will tell you, and this is where Sheila and I have talked about this through the years, it makes you a better disciple. And I think your discipleship is contingent on that. I don't want to tell you that, but I'm going to tell you something. Sitting in this building doesn't make you know anything. If your mind is off in Neverland, I'm telling you what, you don't know. I have to tell you, you know, for those of you who don't know me, and it's probably maybe many of you, I grew up with a father who knew some things about church history, and he was known for that. And I hated visiting other congregations with him. My family would go in, and I'd go to Bible class, and they thought I knew something because I lived with him. And I'd go to Bible class, and all of a sudden, of course, I was thinking about the boys in the classroom, you know, that I might be able to meet. And the teacher would say, well, I bet you know that, something about the Reformation movement. Thought, oh, how in the world would I know that? Ask one of these other kids. Did you know that being in this house doesn't afford you the opportunity to sit at your master's feet unless your mind is there? My sister, I'll tell you a funny story. We had a 50th wedding anniversary for my parents a couple of years back. It's been years now, but we had a lot of people come from different places, and we had tables set, and we decided that what we would do is, there are 5 siblings in my family and lots of grandkids, and so we said, well, we'll sit at all different tables so we can visit with everybody. So each of us Harold kids was at a different table, you know, and visiting with just different people. And my little sister, Lee, who kind of ran a race with me for the lowest grade point average in the Harold household, was at a table with some people, and she came over to me and she said, "They got the wrong Herald kit at their table." And I said, "Really?" She said, "I asked them if they wanted to switch." She said, they started talking about church history and all this stuff, and they said, "Well, what do you think about that?" And she said, "I just told them, I don't think about it." And I said, "Well, really?" She said, "Well, I told them that when Daddy started talking like that, it was like Charlie Brown's teacher's voice. Wah, 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 wah." She said, "I think they were disappointed in the Herald child that they had." I said, "Well, I'm very sorry. I don't know what to do for you." But, you know, you have to think about these words. It doesn't help you to be in the house of the Lord if you don't know who the Lord is. And if you're not listening to everything He's saying. You know, Frank, number one, in fairness to us, when my dad came home, he was more worried about how long our dresses were than telling us about the Reformation movement, number one. You have to put some effort into this. This discipleship cost you something. It cost you your mind and your heart. And you don't get to just get there without knowing Him. You know, He's not going to have a bunch of strangers in heaven with Him. He's going to have people He's communicated with. People that He knows. You think about that. A true discipleship demands that everything else is secondary in your life. That your conversation and your speech reflects your rabbi. He gives the invitation and He provides you with assurance. If you abide in John 8 and 31, if you abide in My word, you are My disciples indeed. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. It is an invitation to have liberty. It is an invitation from sin, anxiety, worry, all the things this world frets about. A peace that does not come with a logical reason, but a peace that passes understanding. It will not make sense to this world, this light in the darkness, sanity in the craziness of the world, but that is what a true discipleship will give you. Abiding in the world is not always, abiding in the Word is not always natural and easy. Like I said, I was not a good student at all in college. I did not have an academic personality naturally. And I'm ashamed to say, I went to four colleges. I had, I think, eight majors. I should be able to tell you anything about anything. I started in nursing. For heaven's sakes, I couldn't take my children and get a shot. Can you imagine what a nurse I would have been? But you know what I learned? I learned really early that this would be worth me learning. And I thought, I think this is what I want to be wise in. This is what I want to know. You know, everybody has a brain. You have capability of knowing things. I did find out that me and Lee had the lowest IQs of the siblings in my family. Lee told me that. I said, "Why did you tell me that? I didn't know that." "You didn't need to tell me that." Misery loves company, I can tell you that. Let me tell you something. You're smart enough to know this. You just have to put your time into it and your energy into it. And you can be wise. Wise! It's the wisdom. It's the wisdom of the woman in Proverbs. We're going to look at her. It's the wisdom she had on her tongue that made people rise up and call her blessed. You want to be smart about something? You read this. You study it. And I'm not talking about a daily Bible reading where you sit down. Okay, I got to get. Oh, hang on, kids. Got to get through. Oh, got it. Okay. This is your master, your teacher. He's teaching you. You learn it. You read. You study. You look at reference materials. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. I've heard discussions about, oh, you shouldn't read commentaries. Let me tell you something. I've heard people tell me they don't read commentaries, and they sit and watch this all day. That is a commentary, by the way. Or they watch political commentary telling them something about Romney. Sorry, lost his name. That's a commentary. You can't look at a Bible atlas because you're thinking about what? Great day. Reference materials are wonderful. If you're reading somebody who's a Calvinist, know about that and read. It's better to be reading something pertaining to the Word of God. You're thinking about something all the time, ladies. Your mind's got something on it. It's got something on it. All right. I'll tell you what's really big. Yeah, it's the health stuff, you know, all the health stuff. People know more about medicine than the doctor does. They just go to the doctor and tell them what to do, you know. It's crazy. Well, I beg you to consider what it is that you are abiding in and living in and dwelling in, because you will look and act and know the words of your master, if you are reading them, thinking about them, meditating on them. We were talking about this last night. When you read, you think. You turn off your radio. You turn off your television. You find a time when you don't have to be with your children. If it's on the toilet, whatever, whatever, whatever. And you think about what it is that you've read. And you think about those words, and you think about that, what that means in your life. We underestimate meditation. We don't spend any time thinking about what it is we've read. It's all academic to us. It needs to be real to us. It needs to be real. It needs to offer us what it is that God intends to provide us. These two women that we're going to look at real quickly. They both had a tremendous relationship with their Lord, a great friendship. Jesus is in their home in Luke, the 10th chapter. I think it was the Feast of Tabernacles was happening at the time. It looks like to me maybe Jesus had sent the men on ahead and he was by himself with these two girls. And it was a busy time. And Mary is fixated on the words of her Lord as she's planted at his feet. She has no intention of moving. And it seems that she had not even noticed the needs that Martha was so distracted by. In verse 38, now it happened as they went that he entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. She had a sister called Mary who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was distracted by much serving. And she approached him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me. All those words he was saying. They're both hearing them. Martha's just thinking about something else. She hadn't heard a word he said. Mary soaked every word in. And Jesus answered her and said, Martha, Martha, you were worried and troubled about many things. But one thing is needed. Mary has chosen the good part, which will not be taken away from her. I'm not taken away from her. She's chosen what she should have. It's a busy time for Martha. And it would seem that probably there were these booths set up, possibly, quite possibly, in a courtyard or an area around Martha's house and Mary's house. And it could be that they were sitting in one of those tabernacles, because you remember that according to the law during this week, they were to eat and sleep and pray and study and in short live in these little tents. Wherever they were, there was a busyness about the time. But you know, it wasn't the busyness that was the problem. There's always something to do. You know, I tell you young women something. You're busy, but I tell you something. I'm busy. I have a really busy life.
I don't need to complain, but
I got movers coming in 2 weeks. Everybody's busy. Busy's just part of it. I would venture to say that the entire family had already been engaged in getting ready for this week. And I bet you Mary had helped Martha a lot already. I don't think Mary was a slacker. You know, for years I thought this was about a type A, type B personality. You know, that's what I'd always been told, that Martha was just one of those women who was worried about everything. I don't think that's it at all. I don't see any reason to think that Mary was just lazy. In fact, the Lord tells us what the problem is. We don't have to guess. He tells us, Mary is more interested in what I have to say than you are. That's what he said to her. He told her, Martha, you're distracted. You're worried about all these things. Mary's listening to me. And I'm not going to take that away from her. That's what Jesus Christ, our Lord, said that day. Martha was a woman of great faith. She professes her faith in John 11 when he comes to heal Lazarus. But you know, isn't it interesting? That account even is interesting with these two sisters. These two sisters just had a different relationship with Jesus Christ. They did. Martha said to him, in verse 24 there of John 11, I know that he will rise again on the resurrection day. She believed in the resurrection. A lot of people didn't believe that. Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. Whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this, he said? And she says, oh, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who's come to the world. She was interested. But on that day in Bethany, she was more interested in all the things she had to do. And it wasn't Martha didn't believe his words, or even that she couldn't repeat his theology. She could tell you what Jesus was and who he was, and I'm sure she could tell her. She seemed to understand the resurrection. But the difference between these two women was that Mary's life hinged on the words that the Lord said, every word. And we see later that she spares no expense on oil. Later, when he's in their house, you remember in John the 12th chapter, and he's in their house and he's eating with them, and Lazarus is there, and Martha's serving, and Mary comes in, and she pours expensive oil on his feet and wipes his feet with her hair. Because her Lord and Savior is in her home. Mary was a disciple who hungered and thirsted for her Lord and all that he represented, and there was a difference in these two women. Christ looks for Mary. You know, read that account when he goes in to heal Lazarus and raise him from the dead. You know who he looks for? He looks for his friend, Mary. I love her. She's great. And I would venture to say, just from what we know, that Mary knew Jesus better because she had listened to everything he said. You know how you know somebody? You listen to their words. You hear them when they say, you can build your house on this, or you can build your house on this. You hear them when they say, you're a light. Go out there and don't put yourself under a bushel. You hear them when they say, you're the salt of the earth. You hear him when he says, it's not the mighty I want, it's the meek. You hear every word he says, and you believe it. Undistracted, you beg for the importance of Jesus. You know what you know? You know what you want to know. That's what you know. That's what all of us know. We know exactly what we want to know. You want to know something, you learn it. You do it. I do it. Everybody does it. You know why somebody knows more about the prophets than you do? Because they've studied them more. It's that simple. You want to know more about Amos? You start reading about him. You read his words. You listen to what he had to say. You find out about where he was a shepherd. You think about the fact that he had to go up to Israel to those palaces of the kings, to this hillbilly hick, and you think about him. You want to know something? You learn it. That's what you do. That's what all of us do. It's not these two sisters. It wasn't about the busyness of the world. It's about what they wanted to know. Jesus' words pack a punch. One thing is needed. One thing is needed. Same words to us. Mary had chosen that thing, and he wasn't going to take it away from her, and it won't be taken away from you. We do it undistracted. My daddy used to tell a story about, well, he should have told stories about us, but he told a story about a girl in his history class who came up to him after her test, and she had failed her test, and she said, "I don't understand what happened." Of course, he had us at home, so he knew girls like this. And she said, "I don't know what happened. I was studied all night." And he said, "Really?" He said, "Well, what did you do? Tell me about your night." And she said, "Well, I had my book, and I read through my book." And he said, "I was thinking she has probably had the radio on, talking on the phone to her boyfriend, and got up a couple times to check her hair." And, you know, I mean, he had daughters at home. He knew what she was doing. She was distracted. Great day. You don't fail a history test if you've studied hard. That's just common sense. I tell you, the number one thing I hear when I travel around the country and I teach, I'll tell you what I hear more than anything else, is how hard it is to find time to study. That's what women tell me. "It is busy, you know, I got a bunch of kids at home, and, you know, I got to keep everybody's schedule straight, and sometimes I have a part-time job, this, that, and the other, and it's hard to find the time. It's just hard to find the time." Well, it is hard to find the time, and then I listen to them talk. And you know what they know? They know, first off, they know how to get their kids in now these car seats. It's incredible. You ought to have a manual like that. It must take you 2 years to learn that. It's incredible. You know, they know how to make their child safe. They know what kind of cheese they're supposed to eat, peanut. I mean, I've said often, I'm too stupid to have a baby today. I'm glad I had my babies 30 years ago because I didn't know they couldn't eat hot dogs with it. I didn't know that. I just shoved things in my kids' mouths. I didn't know that. You know, nobody told me that you had to have hand cleanser all over the house. My kids ate. You know, I figured bugs were protein, you know. You girls know so many things. You spend so much time learning things. You know, this computer stuff you guys know is outrageous. I mean, I'm on Facebook, but great day. Sometimes I send messages to the wrong people. Sometimes I push a button and it goes somewhere and I can't find it. And then I get on the next time and that button that I've learned to look for is not even there anymore because they've redesigned the page. I think, okay, forget this. I don't even know how to send it. I can't tell my kids something on Facebook. I may be telling somebody out, living out, who knows where, or something. You girls know all kinds of things. You can't know the Sermon on the Mount? You know, I've said often, when I got back from Germany, I went to Macy's to buy a baby gift. Y'all may have heard me say this before, and I went in, and I didn't recognize hardly anything in the baby department anymore. My kids were grown at that point, and I said, "Well, let me think about what you liked when you were, you know, had little ones. And they had those gowns that I loved that had the pull string on the bottom, you know, and your babies couldn't, well, Will could. He could get out of anything, but, you know, but, and so I said, went up to the counter and asked the little girl there. She looked like she's about 12 years old, and she was working there. And she said, and I said, do you have those little gowns that you have the string on the bottom? And she said, those kill babies. I said, they kill babies? She said, we don't sell those. Those kill babies. I said, I didn't know they kill babies. Had no idea. But they do, evidently. I said, well, they didn't kill mine. Mine wore them, and they're fine. I mean, you read all kinds of things just to raise your children. You've got time. I'm telling you, young women, you've got time. And I'll tell you something else. You've got more time than you may have later. It's not going to get any less busy for you. My Aunt Marilyn used to say, if the devil don't make you bad, he'll make you busy. There's a lot to that. You may be really, really good, but if you're too busy to sit at his feet, you are distracted and worried about many things. And there is one thing that is needed, and you better get it right. You learn who your Jesus is. You know, I was a young woman in Texas. I had my children. They were 12 months apart, and I was just dying. I just thought I was dying out there in Texas by myself, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And I called my Aunt Marilyn, and I said, I don't know what to do. And she said, why don't you study about who your Lord is? Who's your Lord? And she told me to get this book, Jesus the Messiah, which I think I sent a frizzy of women to the bookstore at Florida College when I said something about it at lectures, and they came to me and said, what in the world have you told these women to read? We got to order a million of them. I said, well, I'm sorry. But anyway, but whatever it is you're studying, you need to study something, and and I'll tell you what, studying Jesus Christ is a wonderful thing to study when you're a young woman. Who is it that you're serving? What is this about for you? Why are you here? What is this going to mean for you? How much effort are you going to put into this? How wise are you going to be? What words are going to come out of your mouth? You know, if all you've got to talk to your teenage daughter about is fashion tips, you hadn't got much to offer her. You be a woman that can guide her spiritually. And let me tell you something, she'll figure all that fashion stuff out herself. You teach her the good stuff, the good part. Isn't it interesting that it's those right and proper things in our lives that can distract us from being good students and having a true relationship with our Lord? And it'll just never end if we don't get it right. I had a friend in college who I went home with. Her parents were Christians. I'm going to end on time. This is pretty exciting for me. And she was a good friend of mine, and I went home with her one time. She was from Athens, Alabama. You would think in Athens everybody would be, you know, they say don't live in Athens and be buried there because the resurrection is going to be so crowded. But I've heard that. That's, my children call those biblical jokes. We have a lot of biblical jokes at our house, you know. It's, and only people that, anyway. All right. What was I saying? Got off on my joke. I went home with her. And this happened to me. And so we got up. We'd had a great weekend. And we got up on Sunday morning. We all got ready for services. And we got in the car. And we said, and I said, where's your mom? She's going to stay home because we're having people over for lunch. Let me tell you something. Busyness never stops. I was, of course, stunned. And really, at that point, was mature enough, I can't believe it, to not say anything, because normally things just popped out of my mouth that I thought, out of my head, out of my mouth, you know. I'm going to tell you something. There's a lot of things to distract you until the day you die. It is up to you. There are lots of good passages that can help us out, but I love, love the busy woman in Proverbs, the 31st chapter. I think she's wonderful. My daughter used to say that she couldn't stand reading that. Well, my daughter's a wonderful Christian woman now, but she used to think this woman was aggravating because she was so busy doing everything, and then at the end it says, you shouldn't be pretty, and, you know, but of course she didn't read it properly. We talked a lot about these kinds of things, but anyway, she's a wonderful woman. Busy, busy, all day, doing things. She was wonderful for her husband. She was wonderful for her children. Verse 25, strength and honor are her clothing. It was her spiritual nature that I most admire. She shall rejoice in a time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. You know how you make your tongue have the law of kindness? You get it in here. That's how you do that. You know how you have the words of wisdom in your mouth? Because they're in your head. It's what Philippians, the 4th chapter, says. You know what you think about? You know what you talk about? You talk about whatever you think about. I'm going to tell y'all something by myself, because I have time. In our next session, we're going to talk about discipleship. And I was going to make a test for y'all, and I was going to give you some pop culture questions, you know, movies and things like that, political questions and then Bible questions. I couldn't think of any pop questions. I hadn't been to a movie in 5 years, so I don't even know what's on at the movie. Well, you would have been bad at the test then. Except, or maybe you would have known the Bible questions, though. That would be good. That was the point. But anyway, you know what you talk about? You talk about what you think about. You know what you think about? Think about whatever it is you put in your head. You know, this is not rocket science, guys. It's just common sense. And you know why we end up not knowing what to tell somebody with words of wisdom like the woman in Proverbs? Is because we don't have it in our head to tell somebody. Look at this woman. On her tongue is a law of kindness. She watches over the ways of her household. She doesn't eat the bread of idleness. She's busy. Busy, busy, busy. There's nothing wrong with busyness. If you have wisdom in your head, if you're busy about these things, be busy talking to other people about it. Be busy teaching. Be busy learning. You know, this is also interesting, by the way. I just thought about this, but Mary was busy too that day. She was listening. That was a good point. She should have told Martha that. It takes a lot to sit and listen to Jesus. It takes a lot to read our Bibles and study. That's a good busyness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Do you know that there are children all over this nation that have mothers that have no value? That is the truth. You be a mother that's valuable to your children. Your children don't need a friend, guys. Your children need someone who can guide them spiritually, who have words of wisdom coming out of their mouth. They have friends. You be their spiritual leader. You teach them about discipleship. You tell them what this means to you. I'm probably got a slide. One thing's needed. Yep. That's a good one. What do you know? We'll start with that next time. Okay. This wasn't just a woman that was busy. She was a woman that had something in her head. She knew a law. She knew words of wisdom. She was somebody that was a disciple. She knew who she was, and she offered that to those around her. Okay, we're going to take a break. I'm even a little bit early, so we can get started a little bit early, because the next session, I'm going to say a few words before we start the discussion. Okay?